WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. After co-creating and writing the phenomenally popular series Seinfeld, Larry David moved from behind the scenes to star in his own HBO series Curb Your Enthusiasm. He plays himself, though for the sake of everyone he knows, I can only hope that in real life he's not nearly as neurotic, self-absorbed, and misanthropic as he is in the series. But his flaws are what make the show so funny, and as critic Ken Tucker says, quote, "You will feel guilty for laughing so hard, which is, I suspect, precisely the reaction David wants," unquote. My guest Robert Whitey is an executive producer and director of the series. Whitey has also made documentaries about his comic heroes, including Lenny Bruce, Mort Saul, and the Marx Brothers. That documentary background came in especially handy for the pilot of Curb Your Enthusiasm, which was a mock documentary about Larry David preparing for an HBO special. Before we meet Whitey, here's a scene from a recent episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Larry David is speaking with his agent, played by Jeff Garlin.
Hey, what's going on with your gal down the hall there? She's crying and...
I'm having a lot of problems with her. You know, first of all, her boyfriend broke up with her.
Yeah.
And frankly, I'd like to do the same.
Why don't you fire her?
I can't.
Why?
Because she knows everything about me. She knows my dietary habits. She knows about all my web of lies and bullshit and deceit. She knows more about me than Cheryl does.
You can't fire her.
She'll destroy me.
You're trapped.
I'm trapped for life. And she doesn't want to do anything else with her life. This is it.
Oh, dear God, you're trapped.
You know what else she knows? She knows about this one.
Oh, man, it came. Wow, college girl's gone wild. Look at that. You know what? We can go to my house and watch it.
Oh, yeah, we'll have like an autofocus
party. Autofocus party? I got the big screen. You can watch it.
Which character are you going to be?
I'm Bob Crane.
Are you Bob Crane?
I'm Bob. You can be the freakish guy.
I'll be Willem Dafoe.
You'll be Willem Dafoe. You're the freak.
Is there a kind of great Larry David moment from one of the episodes that's based on something that happened in real life to him, preferably something that happened when you were there?
Oh, yeah, lots of those. I mean, when you start to spend time with Larry, especially now with the show, and I'm certain this happened during the Seinfeld years too, is you do get in situations with him and you realize, oh boy, this is going to wind up on TV at some point. And Larry does have a little book. In fact, we featured it on one of the episodes in the first season, this little notebook that he carries with him. It's a pocket-sized book. And you see Larry take out the notebook and he makes a note, and that's something that will become a storyline down the road. There have been so many things I've experienced with him. I remember my wife and I a couple of years ago were taking a walk in the neighborhood, and a woman came up to us, an older woman, and just started to talk, and she was complaining about back pain, and we asked her, you know, what happened to her back. And she talked about having house guests at her house, and somebody left the toilet seat up, and she literally fell into the toilet and injured her back, and it had been a problem now for several months. And I told that to Larry, and he just thought that was great, and I saw him write it down in the book, and that became a story this year. So, anything is fair game, and most of the stories are at least based on a nut of something autobiographical, something that's actually taken place.
Now, you mentioned the thing about leaving the toilet seat up and falling into mm-hmm. the toilet. Mm-hmm. In this episode, the comic Shelley Berman plays Larry David's father, and they're actually having a talk with each other about the importance of leaving the seat down for Larry David because he sits. Right. He sits when he urinates.
One of the few men who will admit to it, I guess.
Yes, and let's play the scene in which he admits to it and explains why.
Hey, Pop. Hmm? Do me a favor, okay? Next time you use the bathroom, make sure to keep the seat down.
What are you, pussy whip?
It's not really about her, it's about me. I pee sitting down.
How long have you been doing that?
Well, it started because I was getting up to go at night sometimes, And I didn't feel like putting the light on, so I would sit down, and then I got very comfortable with it.
A man doesn't do that. A man stands up to pee.
Like to sit down, and I don't want to wind up in the toilet because you're keeping the seat up. Keep the seat down.
So you stand like a person. I'm very upset with this. This is crazy.
You know what Winston Churchill said? Why stand when you can sit? Have you ever heard that expression?
No, I never heard that expression, but I don't think he meant in the toilet.
It's a scene from an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, the Larry David Show. My guest, Robert Whitey, is an executive producer and director of the show. Was it your idea to cast the comic Shelley Berman as Larry David's father?
Well, it wasn't my idea per se, although all of us on the show, Larry David, myself, Jeff Garlin, Larry Charles, were all big fans of that era of stand-up comedy, and that was the stuff we grew up on, watching on The Tonight Show and The Ed Sullivan Show. So a lot of these comics who aren't working that much these days, to us, are big heroes. And so Shelley, just like any number of actors, came in and auditioned for that part. We were so thrilled to have him by because we're big fans of his, and he just was so funny in the audition. And I guess it's no secret now with our show, but Shelley, generally when he works, he has hair. Let's put it that way. He wears a piece. I think I can say that. and he did the audition with his hairpiece on, and so Larry went running out to him down the hallway afterwards, saying, "Shelley, you were great. You were great. We love you. We love you. We want you to do the show. I just want to ask you one thing." And Shelley said, "You want to know if I'll work without the piece?" And that, in fact, was it.
How did he know Larry's, that?
He could feel it. He told us later he knew coming in we were going to ask him if he would work without his hair. And he agreed to do it because we thought Larry's father should be bald. And so I told Shelley, you know, what you can do is, instead of admitting now that you've worn a piece all this time, just tell people you shave your head for the show. So I don't know if he's using that, but I thought that was an easy way out.
Do you keep a notebook of obnoxious moments that you could contribute to the show?
I'm not quite that organized, but yes, I do bring Larry ideas, as do other people on the show. And Larry Charles is another producer on the show, and Jeff Garlin, who plays Larry's manager, Jeff Green, and Cheryl. We've all tossed in stories which have wound up on the air. There was actually a few years ago, a friend of mine passed away, and it was all very sad, but the friends got together that night of the funeral. And, you know, my friend lived alone, and he wasn't married, and there was talk about if, you know, his family would eventually be going through his apartment and gathering things. And one of us said, gee, should we go in there first and sort of make a run and see if there's anything that, you know, maybe he wouldn't want his family to discover. And so after a little bit of drinking, we all decided that we should sort of have an understanding that we do that with each other. And if anybody, you know, went prematurely, the others would go into, you know, their home or apartment and start to look to see if there was, you know, any magazines or anything lying about. And so I brought that to Larry, and that wound up being a story in season one, I guess it was, the Porno Gill episode, where Jeff is in the hospital. He's about to have some emergency bypass and asks Larry to go to his house, tells him where the secret stash of pornography is, and asks Larry to gather it up so his wife doesn't find it if, God forbid, something happens on the operating table. But Larry's brilliance, again, was weaving that into a story that he already had about this ex porno star. And when Larry goes into the house and finds the stash, he finds a tape that, you know, this friend that he just had dinner with appears in and puts it on, and then Jeff's parents walk in. So he can take these ideas and just find a way to fashion them into something way beyond anything you could imagine would ever be that funny.
Well, let's hear a scene from the Porno Gill episode. And this is from Curb Your Enthusiasm, the Larry David Show.
This key right here.
Mysterious.
Very mysterious. This key right here, my front door. I need you to go into my house, okay? Go up to my bedroom, to the left of the TV. There's a cabinet by the bookcase there. Open it up, move the linens. There's linens in there. Move them to the side, push on the back door, and it'll open up. Inside there, I have like my porn collection. I have like 7-8 porn tapes, a couple of magazines, all right? I need you to get them out of there. You gotta get it out of there, because if something happens to me,
oh, right. You're thinking like if the anesthesia, something goes wrong.
Anything goes wrong.
So in case you die, you don't want your wife to discover your porno stuff?
She doesn't understand that. I'm not embarrassed in front of anybody.
I don't really understand it either. But okay, that's okay.
That's your own deal.
Yeah, okay.
That's your own deal, Repression
but, you
Jones.
Know, well, what about, is there an alarm code or anything like that?
Easy. 9988.
I better write that down.
But in there should be a pen and a piece of paper.
9988. Okay.
I can't believe you have to write it down.
What am I going to do with these things?
Keep it in your trunk.
What if I get in an accident on the way home?
What about that? And this
porn goes flying
strewn all over the car and all over my bleeding body.
You'll be fine.
Alarm code. I'm worried about this too.
Oh, nothing's gonna happen.
I'm no good with stuff like that. It's too technical for me.
9988.
The alarm's gonna go off. There'll be a SWAT team descending on me. This whole thing just has disaster written all over it.
It'll be fine. I trust me.
And your wife better not show up.
Yeah, I guarantee she's not gonna be there. She'll be here. I appreciate it. You're
good
great
luck.
Pal. You're a great pal. I appreciate
Try
it.
Try not to die.
Try not to die. Thank you.
A scene from Curb Your Enthusiasm. We'll talk more about the series with executive producer and director Robert Whitey after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Robert Whitey, an executive producer and director of the HBO series Curb Your Enthusiasm, starring Larry David as himself. Now, the show is part scripted, part improvised. How does it work? The storyline is scripted, but the actual dialogue is improvised?
We go in with... It's actually grown over the years. The first season, the average story outline was maybe 5 pages. Now they've expanded a bit. Larry writes a little more detail. They're up to 7, sometimes as many as 8 pages. But we go in knowing absolutely what the story is going to be and basically what has to take place in each scene. But there is virtually no written dialogue for the actors. The actors are brought onto the set, generally having no idea what they're going to do. And my standard joke has become that they're given information on a need-to-know basis. It's like working for the CIA. And when I'm directing, I will just give the actors what information their character would know in this scene and give them a general sense of direction about what's going to take place in the scene. But they make it up as they go. And we cast from a pool of talented improvisational actors, primarily here in L.A., and we just let them go. So we know basically what has to happen in each scene, and we know what marks to hit, but we love the spontaneity of people making it up as they go. And we'll just shoot each scene as many times as we have to until we know we've got something to work with, and then we continue to hone it in the editing room.
What are some of the different requirements for you as a director when you're working with improvisation compared to working with something scripted?
Well, it becomes a little harder to sort of block the shots for camera. We sort of take a documentary approach in that anything can happen, so let's just make sure that we catch it on camera. And we do shoot with 2 cameras. And my instructions for the crew is to always have a camera on Larry because so much of the comedy has to do with his reactions. And you just want the scene covered because things will spontaneously happen. Actors will say things that if you don't catch it on camera the first time, then you'd have to go back and recreate it and lose the spontaneity. So basically, the first take will be some sort of general master shot that will catch as much of the action as possible with the camera on Larry. And then we do the scene several times. The actors are given notes. We continue to hone it. And then it's just a matter about getting the right coverage for camera so that we can cut it together in the editing room. We wind up with a lot of footage, and we spend much more time in the editing room than we actually do on the set. The shows take on an average 5 to 7 days to shoot. But we're in the editing room easily for 3 weeks on each episode.
How did you start working with Larry David?
Larry and I have known each other for more than 20 years now, and we met initially. I was heading up development for the production management team of Rollins and Joffe, who produce all of Woody Allen's movies and have been with him from the beginning. And, oh, they've managed every great comedian from Robin Williams to Billy Crystal to Robert Klein and Martin Short and on and on. But I was their development person about 20 years ago, a little more. And so one of my duties was to read scripts that came in for non-Woody Allen projects. And a script came on my desk called Prognosis Negative, and I read it, and it was one of the funniest scripts I'd ever read. And I said to the guys, well, we have to bring in this writer, Larry David. This is such a funny script. And we all did know Larry because Larry, at that time, had appeared on a show called Fridays, which was a late-night variety comedy show. So we brought Larry in for these meetings. Now, the story of Prognosis Negative was typical Larry David. It was about a fellow much like Larry. This was, again, you know, years ago, so it would have been the younger Larry, who was single, who was dating and just could never make a commitment to a woman. And he'd go through one relationship after another because he couldn't commit. And then finally he finds out that a woman that he dated a few years ago, who was nice, he quite liked her, finds out that she's terminally ill. And that she doesn't know it. That's the beautiful thing. He finds out accidentally from a doctor. And so he thinks, well, this is the perfect relationship. because I can go out with her and I can commit to her. And in, what she got, 6 months, and 6 months it'll be over. So that was sort of the basis of the story. So so Larry would come in for these meetings with myself and the executives there. And the executives would say to Larry, you know, we love the script. It's very, very funny. But boy, this character, you know, he's not very sympathetic. Do you think there's anything you can do to make him a little more sympathetic, a little more likable? And Larry would think about it and then say, no, I don't think so. No, not at all. So it was more important to him to sort of stick to his guns about that character rather than make an easy sale to get the film made and to change it. So I just thought, well, I like this guy. I like his way of thinking. So we started to hang out. I'd go to the clubs with him, the comedy clubs. He was doing stand-up in those days. And so many nights I'd be with him in the clubs and he'd be on stage performing. And some nights he'd do rather well, but there were nights when he would just bomb terribly. And I would just be in the back of the room laughing because I thought the material was brilliant and the audiences did not know what to make of him. And they would just stare up at him like carp in a pond. And I remember thinking, boy, if the country ever caught up to this guy's sense of humor, there'll be chaos in the streets.
What was his stand-up act like?
Well, it was unlike anything else I had seen. First of all, Larry would come out on stage, and there was no good evening, how are you, anything like that. He actually looked a little bit like a deer caught in the headlights behind that microphone. And this is one night I remember. This was sort of typical of what he would do. He would come out on stage, and the first thing he'd say was, "Every morning I wake up and thank God that I wasn't born a wealthy Spanish landowner."
Because what?
Which is, you know, a typical opening for a comedy monologue. He said, "Because if I were, I would never know whether to address the help using the to form or the usted form." He'd say, "If I use the usted form, I don't want them to feel I'm being condescending, yet if I use the to form, I don't want them to feel so familiar that they can just come into my kitchen and help themselves to anything in my refrigerator." And that would be the kind of thing that would just knock me on the floor, because to me that was a very sort of Robert Benchley-esque sort of concept, something that harkened back to the days of Benchley and Perlman and those great wits. But the audience was, you know, usually it was 1:30 in the morning and they were sort of drunk and they wanted the, you know, the obvious sex jokes. And I'm telling you, I would be hysterical, but people would be throwing things at him. People would be shouting to him to get off the stage. And Larry has a very combative personality, so he was no shrinking violet. He would start shouting back at the audience. And then there would be the people in the audience who were ready to jump up there and punch him, and then other people who'd be shouting at them to, you know, let him talk. And this melee would break out in the audience for the pro-Larry faction and the anti-Larry faction. And I saw that happen on more than one night.
Now, you mentioned Prognosis Negative, the screenplay that he wrote that you had looked at while you were working for Rollins and Jaffe. And that's a running gag in Seinfeld. There's a movie called Prognosis Negative that's playing at the theaters. So I didn't realize that that came.
Yeah,
from.
that was an in joke for the, you know, 12 people who knew about the script. But what was amazing about Larry was this sense of humor, which seemed to be so unmarketable in a way, which seemed to be so distinct and so offbeat and anything but mainstream, anything but made for television, was turned into this show magically that became really the most successful comedy series in the history of television. And those of us who knew Larry and knew his sense of humor just watched the show and sat there shaking our heads saying, he did it. He found a way to do it. And I think a lot of that had to do with Larry's very unique, wonderful comic sensibility being meshed with Seinfeld, who is himself just a very acceptable, likable, palatable person. And I think it was that mix, and this analogy has been made 100 times, sort of the Lennon-McCartney thing, which both Larry and Jerry can't stand to hear. But I think there is something to that. I think the two of them coming together just worked beautifully.
My guest is Robert Wydee. He's an executive producer and director of Curb Your Enthusiasm on HBO. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Robert Wydee, an executive producer and director of the HBO series Curb Your Enthusiasm, starring Larry David as himself. Since you've directed so many documentaries about comics, I'm wondering where you think Larry David fits into modern comedy. Because he's kind of like an insult comic, but it's not like he's Don Rickles or something. I mean, he's more like obnoxious than insulting, though he insults people all around, but there are people in his real world, since this is a sitcom.
Right. Well, what is interesting is, as schooled as I was in the great comedians, both of the silent era and, you know, the golden age, the 30s, Larry is familiar with very little of that. He, you know, he's never seen a complete Marx Brothers movie or a W.C. Fields movie, and this is the stuff I grew up on. And Larry and I, a couple of years ago, went to a Harold Lloyd film. It was the first time he had seen Harold Lloyd, maybe the first time he had seen an entire silent feature. And afterwards, we walked out of that theater, and his jaw was agape, and he just said, "My God, that was so funny. I didn't know that silent films were so funny." I said, "Yeah, they can be. I don't know if you've, you know, been exposed to them before, but that really was his first exposure." And he really grew up. The only real influences that I've known him to cite have been Abbott and Costello, and really from the TV years more than from their films, and Phil Silvers and Bilko and all of that. But that's what's interesting is that he is that intuitive. He doesn't give a second thought to really his comic persona in any sort of historical sense. And I'm always thinking about that. And it even informs the way sometimes I'll direct or stage things or what I'll contribute to stories, whatever. If Larry is doing battle with a little kid, well, that can be uncomfortable unless that little kid has really done something to deserve Larry's wrath. And that was sort of W.C. Fields' thing, is that he could go after Baby Leroy, but only after Baby Leroy dumped Fields' pocket watch into the molasses and was acting like a real brat. And sometimes with Larry and Jeff, I'll stage things in the way that Laurel and Hardy would do it, where if they're facing Jeff's wife, Susie, who's screaming at them, Larry will sort of hide behind Jeff's girth, which is a very kind of Laurel and Hardy move. So I'm always thinking about those things and thinking about Larry's place, in sort of that chronology of great comedians, but he doesn't give it a second thought.
This season, Larry David has been cast by Mel Brooks in The Producers, in the role of Max Bialystock, originated by Nathan Lane. How did that plot idea get hatched?
Larry and I were actually in New York a few years ago, I think, doing some publicity for maybe it was the second season or the third season, and we saw The Producers in New York, not with Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick, but another cast that was in. And Larry, just watching these people on stage singing and dancing, just was flabbergasted. How did they do that? How do they memorize all that? How do they know all the steps? And he just thought it was the scariest notion in the world. And then he started to think, geez, what if I were put in that situation where I had to do all that? And again, that was just an idea that grew out of that moment of seeing the show. And the season finale this year is the opening night of The Producers on Broadway, and audiences can see if disaster strikes or not when Larry takes to the boards.
Well, Robert Whitey, thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Terry.
Robert Whitey is an executive producer and director of the HBO series Curb Your Enthusiasm, starring Larry David. The season finale is this Sunday. Here's a scene from earlier in the season. Ben Stiller and Larry David are on their way to a rehearsal for The Producers, and they've just dropped off Stiller's wife at her yoga class. Larry David is still in the back seat.
Why don't you come up front?
I'm okay.
Come on up front.
I'm good. I'm good.
Are you serious?
Yeah, why? What's the difference?
Larry, I'm not going to drive you around like I'm your chauffeur. Get in the f***ing front seat, all right?
Ben, you're not driving me around like I'm a chauffeur with 2 minutes from the rehearsal hall.
You know, what kind of person asks another person to drive him around like this? This kind of mentality is what's...
Well, what kind of person is so insecure that they have to make somebody move into the front seat so they don't think that they're driving somebody around?
No, the kind of person that's so insecure that needs to be driven around in the back seat, subliminally telling
to do
me,
with me
that you need
around.
Me to drive
why
you around.
I leave my seat? Go into the front seat.
Because I asked you to sit in the front seat of my car, and it's my car, and it's my car. I make the rules, okay?
Oh, you're making the rules?
Yeah,
we would have already been there already.
Yes,
we
would have already.
Very good. Oh, you can't drive with somebody in the back seat.
Yeah, you're such a baby. You're a grown man baby.
Are you saying I'm a man child?
I'm saying you're a little baby. And you know what? Little baby wants to ride, we'll give little baby a ride.
You know what? Little baby wants to walk.
No, little baby.
Little baby's going to walk.
No, you know what? I should have brought my little baby seat for my...
Little baby's going to walk.
No, Mr. David, where to now? Where to now, Mr. David?
Oh, I know. I didn't read the rules. Getting into the car.
Here we go. Driving Mr. Larry.
Hey, take it easy, man.
Larry David and Ben Stiller in a scene from Curb Your Enthusiasm.